Global fraud. It's a nightmare every organization must deal with. Recently, a colleague and I taped an interesting presentation on this topic, and I wanted to share it with my podcast listeners. So stick around to hear what we had to say. Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, depending upon what continent you're on. I'm Mary Schaefer from AP Now, and my co-host of this event is Jamie Radford from the AP Association. Today's talk is going, I have a few introductory remarks. I'm going to spend the lion's share of the time talking about new frauds, and specifically new frauds that have come to light with regards to this coronavirus. And my goal here, and Jamie's goal also, is to identify these frauds and make you aware of them, because that typically, just by knowing about them and knowing what to look for, sometimes that's kind of, I like to call it the silver bullet and the best protection that any organization can have about any fraud and protecting itself. And then some words of wisdom, or hopefully words of wisdom at the end. So, you know, I was yelling at my husband the other day, not yelling at him, but reminding him, don't forget to put your mask on before you go into the store. And it occurred to me that that was had a whole different meaning today than it used to. And with that, are you wearing masks over there, Jamie?
We are indeed, Mary. We are indeed. And thank you for hosting again today. So I agree with you. The slide's very poignant. The masks nowadays aren't necessarily just for the robbers and the crooks. Unfortunately, we all have to wear them as we go outside.
Okay. And so let's move on to, unfortunately, more serious stuff. So again, our mission today, introduce some new frauds, make you familiar with them, and also keep in mind, I'm going to talk also about some of the basics, because we might tend to forget about them, and then hopefully get you to think about it. So somebody has written in about the masks. Some are in Mississippi, but not as many people are wearing them as should be. All right. So this is a Van Gogh drawing. It's the Parsonage Garden at Newnan, which I'm probably saying wrong. And some of you may have recalled it was stolen from a Dutch museum right at the beginning of this crisis. And I remember when it happened, I was outraged. And I said, you know, some of these people have no morals. I can't believe they're taking advantage of the situation. And of course, as we found out, and we were talking about this a little earlier today, Jamie, it doesn't appear that crooks have any morals whatsoever.
No, it doesn't look like that way. The issues at the moment, Mary, are that people are using it as an advantage to commit fraud. That's the downside of where we are.
Yep, unfortunately. And I wish you were wrong, but no, they're taking advantage. Okay. So I wanted to start off with a warning that came from the FBI. So a lot of the information that I have in this talk today is from recent FBI bulletins, also some from the UK's Metropolitan Police. Do you call the Metropolitan Police or Met Police?
So it's Met Police, I suppose, Mary, but you can call it Metropolitan.
Okay. So you'll see me go back and forth between the two of them, and then some my own personal experience, and then some from our readers. So that's one of the ways that we get this information, is as soon as people in the community become aware of it, they share it, and that's the best thing that we can do to help each other. So what the FBI has said is that history has shown us that criminals take every opportunity to perpetrate fraud on unsuspecting victims, especially when a group of people is vulnerable or in a state of need. And the other key point that I want to bring home here is that, you know, we're talking a lot about businesses and business fraud, but keep in mind that crooks, if they can get their hands on your banking credentials, they will happily use them. So we need to be careful, not only for our work and for our company's accounts, but also for our personal ones. And do you see that in England as well?
Yeah, absolutely, Mary. You know, the phishing scams, the emails, the text messages, they're rife at the moment in the UK, especially in the personal world, because a lot of people come home also.
Yeah. Are you seeing a lot with text messages?
Yeah, very much. Again, the problem with text messages, you can't really block them. So they're coming
Right.
through, and then hopefully people aren't clicking links, which is the most important part not to do.
Right. I think that you use links more, or you use texts more than we do, but I've gotten my fair share of crazy ones. Okay. So going back to the FBI, they had three areas where they wanted to call special attention. Some of these are the traditional ones, but they're just as important today as they were, 6 months ago, a year or 2 years ago. The first one, which Jamie has already alluded to, is when you open an email, don't open the attachment, don't click on the link when you don't recognize the sender. And there's just a ton of these emails out there now, and we'll talk some about it. The next issue, and this is one that I'm constantly harping about, and it's even more important now than it has been in the past. And this involves confirmation that you can't confirm or verify any request for any change in something out of the ordinary, especially when it has to do with money, but also don't forget information, data. When somebody asks you to send funds either to a different recipient, or maybe we've seen some requests for changing dates on wire transfers, etc. So it's more important than ever to confirm these requests. And you may be sitting there thinking, yeah, well, that's great, but we're already overworked and not all our vendors are in the office, and I understand that, but it's still really important. And last thing, there's been an explosion of crimes related to COVID-19. A lot of them are just selling things that are totally inappropriate or just out and out fraud. One of the things we've seen several emails here, at least I have, about people purporting to have a cure for the coronavirus, which of course is not true. Are you seeing any of that?
Yeah, Mary. So unfortunately, even our UK government are, seems to be getting these scams as well. So when we're looking for gowns, masks, whatever it
Yeah.
will be, scammers are even trying to attract and go to public bodies as well. So they have no morals. They'll go for anybody.
Yeah, and in fact, I think I have a case later on where they got I don't know, I can't remember now if it's millions of dollars or millions of pounds from a government agency, which is really heartbreaking when you think about it for a minute. But again, no morals. Okay. All right. So, one of the things that it's been around for a long time, but I've personally seen is an increase in emails with attachments. And of course, they want you to download the attachment. So, because when you download the attachment, at the same time you're downloading keylogging software, which will allow the crook remotely to gather whatever you type in, and they can get your banking credentials from that and either sell them or use them to take money out of the account. And remember, that can be your account or it can be your company's account. Okay, and this is one of the reasons why I'm always like nagging. If you come to any of my webinars, you've probably heard me nagging about people you having a separate computer for their online banking and using that for nothing else. And I can tell you personally, I do that. I have a small tablet that I use for online banking and nothing else. And that's what I use it for. So that hopefully if I do make a mistake and download an attachment or an email or I click on a link that I shouldn't, and that software gets downloaded onto my computer, they won't at least be able to get to my bank accounts or any of my any accounts where I have money. I'm not going to ask you, Jamie, if you have a separate computer.
No, and even if I did, I wouldn't tell you.
All Okay, but it's really critical. And the emails that I'm seeing, and it's a little upsetting because they look so good. I'm seeing one that claims to have details about a payment. So clearly this is being targeted at me, that I would like to get an email with details of an electronic payment. And then the other one is purchase orders. And the details about payments, details about purchase orders, these seem to be the primary ones. Well, not the primary ones, but newer ones that are coming out. And when I look at the emails and the signature blocks in these emails, it looks like somebody that, we might do business with. We don't, but it might be somebody that we might. Now I see somebody's just typed in that they're also seeing attachments that purport to have details about shipments. Okay, so even though it looks like it's a legitimate business document, be careful, be careful, be careful. Are you getting any of these, Jamie?
Yeah, I think the purchase order one is the one that's gone crazy currently. I personally have probably six, seven of these a day.
A
So,
day?
and it, yeah, so I don't, how they got hold of my email address, but I think you're right. They make it so relevant to your industry. And there is that slight doubt or thought that goes through your head to think, is this really one of my suppliers? Is this really a purchase order? But absolutely, delete, don't click, just get rid.
Right. So this next one is that is more in the UK than it is in the US right now. Not to say it wouldn't come here, because crooks are great about copying something that works. But Tesco's is a grocery store or a like department store combination?
Yeah, so it's a like Walmart. It's
A
a
Walmart.
grocery store, but a big grocery store.
Okay, so the scam is and you see I've got a copy of the coupon. They're sending coupons and they're saying, you got $50. And depending upon which version of this you got, it could either be an anniversary, or sometimes they're saying to help you through furlough, whatever. And I don't know if you can see the in the bottom of that coupon, it says today only. So that feeling of urgency that they want you to do it, use it right away. Also Waitrose, Argos, Morrisons. Another one says you have a package waiting for you at Tesco. Again, they want you to click on it to get the information. So remember, don't click and don't share. The other one is don't share. They're also letting you share it with your friends. And £50 is not a small amount of money, so it might be tempting. But if you want to stop, you want to take a step back and say, okay, they're giving £50 away to anyone who shows up. Okay, that does not seem reasonable. If, let's say, you get one of these coupons and you think, you know what, I think this is legitimate, even before you click or share it, call the company. Call and ask, are you doing this? I can tell you, if there was a legitimate situation where Tesco's was giving had $50 coupons that they were emailing all over the place, you could probably find several articles about it if you just got on the internet, because I'm sure there would be people who wanted to share this information. Do you agree, Jamie?
Yeah, absolutely, Mary. I think these sort of scams, they resonate on places like Facebook,
Yeah.
where they'll a sort of a Tesco's voucher, then people grab them and think they're doing the best, and they share it with all their friends. Before you know it, then these scams have got into all the friends' databases. So again, I'm with you. If something's too good to be true, guess what? It is.
It is, yeah. Okay, now somebody has written in, with the COVID-19 and working from home, we're seeing more companies send us their payment information to send ACH instead of paper check. And you are correct, and in fact, companies are encouraging this, and you need to verify that. And I'm going to talk about it. We're going to talk about it, Jamie and I, a little bit further in the presentation, because some of them will be legitimate, and some of them, unfortunately, won't be. But we will talk about that probably in more detail than you would like. Okay. So with all these things, I want to share with you that my colleague at Notch said to me when we were talking about payments, something about payments, I don't remember exactly what, in the current time. And he said, remember, vendors want to be paid, okay? He said, vendors want to be paid, so call them. Okay, they will either have the calls forwarded, so the call will go to someone's house, it will have been forwarded, or there'll be voicemail and you can leave the message because they want to get paid. So don't think, oh, nobody's there, I shouldn't call. Yes, it'll take a little bit longer. Yes, it will be a little bit more difficult, but it's not impossible. Okay, and it's much better than sending money to a crook and not being able to get it back. So, do you see a lot of companies forwarding the voicemails?
Yes, yeah, so in the UK, Mary, so as soon as we went into some form of lockdown, most organizations had forwarded emails, telephone calls, and all that went into transition. And I think in the UK, we did very well. And again, I suppose the difference in the UK is from the comment in the box that a lot of our payments are electronic anyway.
Yeah.
So we make very few checks. So that's not really hit the UK so much, but we still do make some check payments. So no doubt the fraudsters will try that as well.
Okay. And just for anybody listening to this, I had a long talk with somebody from Notch that we did a podcast for. It's Rob Unger. I think it was podcast number 52 or 53 of the AP Now podcast. If you can't find it either on YouTube or our website, drop me an email and I will share the contact information. Now we have two good comments that came in, so I want to read it to you. Hi, Mary. Do you suggest for ACH, which is electronic payments, do you suggest making two independent calls for my company, or is one call sufficient? The answer is two calls is always better than one, but if you are satisfied with who is confirming when you call with one, that would be sufficient. You're going to love this one. I just had an email saying my TV license had expired today. Click on the link to pay. Not. Also had a bribery email saying, oh, they had a graphic video of me and I should pay up of 2,000 Bitcoin. The offer was valid for only one day. That last one about a graphic, it's not a graphic video that I get. I get that they see me watching porn on the internet. Now, I have a lot of bad habits, but watching porn on the internet isn't one of them. But be aware, that's another one. That's been going on, I don't know, 6 months. Do you have it over there, Jamie? Do you have it in the UK?
I don't even know what porn is, Mary, so no.
Yeah, so we have, so I mean, this is, I mean, the first time I saw it, I was like, what? And it's now $2,000. When I first started getting this email, it was $700. Then it went up to $800. But it wasn't $800, it was like $861. I'm like, yeah, okay. But be aware, there's all sorts of crazy stuff like this out there. Don't click on any links and don't send anyone any money or send any Bitcoin. Because the Bitcoin is gone once it's sent. Okay, so the emails that the most popular fraudulent emails, isn't that an awful thing to say, are emails claiming to sell a cure, emails selling a testing kit. It's possible they're legitimate, but most likely they're not. You know how we are, how far behind we are with testing kits. Emails selling masks. Now, when we talk about masks, I'm not talking about masks that people have made at home. I'm talking about people who claim to have the medical level ones, medical quality, you know, the N95s. Hopefully we'll have them soon, but, you know, I would not buy from an email that came from somebody I don't know about them. And then in the U.S., we're seeing emails come out, some from law firms, some from tax accountants, offering help with the government assistance programs. Now, the issue with these are some of them are legitimate. Some of them are real law firms or real accounting firms who have the ability to help. So if you are applying and you need the help, you need to proceed very carefully. Are you seeing the mask emails, Jamie?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, all of those actually, Mary, even the email with the government assistance, the masks, all of them are trying, but some of them, as you say, may well be legitimate. But, you know, if you're looking for the say support with the government assistance programs, you should be reaching out to the accountants, the tax accountant, whoever it will be, for support. Don't wait for them to contact you. That's the safest way to do it.
Okay, good. Yes. Yeah. And one more comment, and this would be, this is the ideal solution long term. And we talk a lot about what we're going to do when we get back. And here's something that might be great for all of us. This person writes in, our voicemail goes to our emails, so I'm able to listen to them from home and respond to the ones that, you know, need to be responded to. So that's a good thing. I'm seeing a lot of mask emails. I feel like some of them are legit if they are from a known or used vendor. Yes, but you want to be careful about the quality. I've heard complaints about that. How about the supplier be responsible to inter control a 3-point check? All I can say is good luck with that. Okay. And at the end of the day, if we're making payments, we need to be responsible because it's our money. Okay. Jamie, you alluded to this already. There have been several cases where government and healthcare industry, companies or government agencies or municipalities, bought what they thought were, you know, appropriate personal protective equipment, ventilators, which we're having, you know, a big problem with, and then nothing. The parties disappeared. They sent the money, and then there was no delivery. And of course, the money was sent by wire transfer, which was, of course, immediately moved. And of course, everybody is so frantic now to get the appropriate supplies. And sometimes they can't get them through their existing supply chain, so that they will go through this. Sometimes they've got their back to the wall, and they'll end up going to somebody who, you know, they don't know, and maybe a fraud. I can tell you, we have a friend who's in the garment industry, and he has never been busier than he is now, trying to source the appropriate materials and supplies to make masks and gowns and other things that are needed. This is what you were talking about before, Jamie?
Yeah, absolutely, Mary. I think the issue we face is obviously, as you know, the global pandemic obviously is highlighting where there are issues with PPE, and it's a global shortage. It's not just in any particular country, and it's a buyer's market or a seller's market at the moment. So unfortunately, even governments are reaching out to organisations that maybe they'd never even dream about. But the reality is, it shouldn't stop you from doing the due diligence and the checks that you would ordinarily do, just because, you know, there's some urgency. You need to have those checks in place as well.
Right. Before, you know, the money's gone, you don't have the goods, and, you know, and again, talking about no morals. Okay, so for a few years, we haven't really talked about this that much because it kind of had gone away, but this is a warning from the FBI, and this is about money mules, and this is where somebody is recruited, they think, for a legitimate job, and it's actually a crook who is has finagled the credentials of a company and is getting money wired to them that they're not entitled to, and so they run it through the money mule who can gets to keep a portion of that money. And then, of course, when the fraud unravels, the crook is gone and the money mule is technically responsible for those funds, for paying back those funds, even though they don't have them. And they tend to prey on people who are out of work or having financial difficulty. And of course, with the huge layoffs that are occurring around the world, more people are falling into this category. So this is kind of a warning. Be careful. If somebody, you know, approaches you for a job that requires that you use any of your personal, your bank accounts, that should be a red flag, and you should run as fast as you can. Jamie?
Yeah, Mary, I think, you know, again, as you say, the issue around the furloughs and the layoffs and sort of redundancies in the UK is exactly the same. Don't be tempted. Don't be suckered into these things. Just be very, very cautious with what you do currently.
Yeah. It's to me, it's horrific that they would prey on somebody who was already having a, you know, in difficult times. But again, no morals, no conscience, no caring. Okay. So here comes more work at a time when, you know, you're already stressed, but you receive an email from a company that you normally do business with. But they want a change. They want a change of some sort. They want you to send it to a different account. Maybe they want a prepayment, whatever, or maybe they want a drop shipment. Whatever it is, there's a change to the standard way you do business. Now, to be fair, okay, in some cases, this is going to be a legitimate request, but oftentimes it won't be. And that, you know, doesn't really, that puts you in an awkward position. You must verify. If you cannot verify that whatever they're asking for is legitimate, and by verify, usually I mean pick up the phone and call, and don't call a number that was included in the email. You know, call the company's main number. If you can't verify, then don't make the transaction, okay? Because once the money's gone, it's gone. And me personally, I would rather apologize to the CFO for not making the transaction and then have to explain that I had fallen for a phony email and now $500,000 or £500,000 was gone. What about you, Jamie?
Yeah, I'm exactly the same, Mary. You know, beg for forgiveness, as is a saying in the UK. I just wouldn't do anything with it and live with the consequences. You know, if you're the powers that be put you in trouble for doing it, you know, or not doing it, so be it.
Right. Because that's a lot easier than try and explain money that you lost. Okay. Do you feel, here comes a question. You ready, Jamie? Do you feel when addresses are changed, we should call and verify them, especially if we pay that vendor by check? My simple answer to that is yes. How about you?
Yeah, absolutely. Again, so the UK, we don't have that many checks, but even if we were paying them by electronic means, if somebody changes something which is fundamental to the vendor master, then we would always suggest as best practice to make a call, because you want to make those checks. You want to make sure that you're verifying this type of data.
Right. And somebody has written in here, and I think more companies will be of the same mindset, although not everybody will tell you this, but she says, this is the process I implemented about a year ago, and companies are appreciative when we call to verify. Okay. Hopefully that's the new mindset that we're going to. Somebody else has written in this is a common practice for all our vendor changes. Okay, so let's say you get asked to make a change and you call and you can't, or you get somebody on the phone and they call and ask you, and they say no one's in the office, which, you know, very well what could be true. So this is a trick for verification that comes from the Met Police. We also occasionally heard it from our readers, and this is what they say. If you get a call and you're suspicious, okay, it's somebody that you have a good relationship with, but you don't recognize their voice, because why would you? You usually communicate by email, and they ask you to make a change, but you're suspicious. You can ask them some questions that only you and the real company would know the answer to. So you could ask them, what's the purchase order number? You could ask them what the a contract number is. You could ask them what their tax ID number is. You could ask them what the last three payments you made to them were. Something that you would know. And then you could also ask them, after you finish, you know, putting them through the third degree, you could ask them to email you the request. And then when you get it, you know, look at the email address, look at it closely. Because, you know, we're in crazy times. Agree?
Yeah. So I think what I would add there, Mary, is that just be careful not to share any info at that time,
right?
Either. A lot of fraudsters will say, oh, let me just confirm the bank details that you hold for us at the moment, or, you know, what is the details you hold? So just be very careful that if you're asking these questions and you're going to ask them to email you, just be very careful of what info you do share on those calls.
Right. Somebody has typed in, I had this recently. Rather than calling the number back that she left me, I called the number I had on file and confirmed that it was the same number on the invoice for my payments over many years. Just wanted to confirm it because the voicemail sounded sketchy. And we're probably all being overly cautious now. I know I am. But better to be a little cautious. Again, better to ask for forgiveness. Okay. All right. At one point, my daughter was yelling at me. It was just like, Ma, don't be so suspicious. But I am. Okay. Just to reiterate, call the company back using the regular contact information that you have. And if you can, speak to the person that you normally speak to. Now, this piece of advice came from the Met Police, and I have to admit, I'm not that technology oriented, and I did not know this. If you're going to, you hang up the phone, and now you're going to call to verify, your phone line can be kept open for 5 minutes, up to 5 minutes after you call. So either use a different phone line or wait 5 minutes. Did you know this, Jamie?
Yeah, absolutely, Mary. So it's used in the UK predominantly to defraud elderly individuals.
Yeah.
So they'll phone up and say, "Look, we're from your bank. Now, we need some details or whatever." The person then will say, "Well, let me phone you back." So they put the phone down, assuming the other person's put the phone down their side, but they remain on the line. So as that person's dialing the phone number, you're actually phoning the same person you've just spoken to. Hence the reason they tell you to leave it at least 5 minutes so that line goes dead, and then you can then use the phone to make the outbound call.
Yeah. Okay. One other question has come in. You've mentioned more than one that companies appreciate calling them to verify bank details. How do companies react if you ask to send a confirmation, if you ask them to send a confirmation of the bank details per email? Is this a good practice? What do you think, Jamie?
Personally, yes, I think it is. I think that I think in the UK we always phone for confirmation of bank details. We ask them to put letterhead paper with the bank details, and usually as well some sort of authority figure in that organisation to sign a letter to say that you're requesting some sort of change. So it's not just on a phone call. You're trying to verify as much as you possibly can. And the reality is, in these trying times, okay, it's taking a bit more time and a bit more effort, but be very, very cautious wherever possible.
Yeah. Okay, so Jamie, I'm going to throw this one to you again because you are much more knowledgeable about this than I am. Can you repeat about the phone line being kept open?
Yes, so effectively somebody will phone somebody, and so you're in the inbound call takes the phone call. May have suspicion that it might be a fraudster. The fraudster then says, "Right, okay, make the phone call to say your bank." And when you put the phone down, the fraudster keeps the line open their side. So they haven't put the receiver down. And because remember, they phoned you, it's their phone call. So when you pick the receiver up again, you're actually still on the same line to the fraudster. And when you dial, it makes a dialing tone as though you're making a call, but you're actually going to phone the fraudster. And the fraudster can then either put a different accent on or get some further details from you. That's the reason why they ask you to wait at least 5 minutes so the fraudster's call to you is then ended so they're not on the same line as you.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Okay. Here comes another tip. We have a form that vendors have to fill out and sign before we change their electronic payment details. Okay. All right. Okay. So now we have some real life examples. A financial institution received an email, supposedly from a CEO of somebody who they do business with, and they had scheduled $1 million transfer. Wire transfer. It had been scheduled ahead of time. The request was that the transfer date be moved up and the recipient change. And the claim was that this was because of the coronavirus outbreak and quarantine processes and precautions. Which sounds good. And of course, the financial institution went ahead, made the changes, and then it later unraveled that it did not come from the CEO, and the email address had only one letter changed in it. So not a pretty situation, and it just goes to show how you can't be too careful. So going back to what we were talking about, this would be a change to normal processes. The dates changed, the accounts changed, and if you were following the best practices that I and Jamie are recommending, you would have then picked up the call, picked up the phone and called the CEO or the company to ask them to verify, did they make these changes? Did they request these changes in the email? And I'm guessing, Jamie, you're on the same board? Same.
Yeah, I think so, Mary. You know, we had a great presentation last week on LinkedIn, which is amazing, don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But remember, data is all out there. So if you want to know the CEO of any organization, large organization or small, you can usually find it on LinkedIn. So just be overly cautious because that data is in cyberspace at the moment. So just be very cautious with this stuff.
Right. And I would tell you, and I don't think that I'm any great detective, but within, 5 to 10 minutes, I could probably figure out what any of your email addresses are, or 90% of you. Some companies have gotten a little smarter about it, but I could probably figure out 90% of the email addresses of people online. And I bet you could too, Jamie.
Absolutely, Mary. Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. So next one, a bank customer was emailed by someone claiming to be a customer's client in China. A client requested that all invoice payments be changed to a different bank because they claimed that their regular banks were inaccessible due to coronavirus audits. And in this case, the victim sent several wire transfers. So several problems. I think there'll probably be some coronavirus audits down the road, but I don't think anybody's going through them to, or if they are, to the extent that bank accounts would be inaccessible. And again, change of details, different bank, which means different bank account. So verify, it should be verified. Okay. One more comment. One problem with a signature is how do you know, how do you verify it? Who keeps specimens of all their vendors? And the answer to that, as the person has written in, is no one. But it's just one more step. But this is also why the phone is so important for verification. And in the example that Jamie gave, they were only sending the letterhead with the signature after there was a phone call. Am I right?
Yeah, absolutely, Mary. Absolutely.
Okay. So we call this change my bank account fraud. I think in the UK you refer to it as either mandate fraud or direct debit fraud. And this is where people claim, you know, they've changed their bank account as we've been discussing. Now, keep in mind, think about your own company. You're at home, you're working, everybody's just doing their best to keep, you know, the bills paid, the invoices coming in, etc. Very few companies are going out opening new accounts. So if you do get one of these messages, you want to call and verify it. But keep in mind, there's a good chance it's a phony because how many new bank accounts are being opened today? And again, if you can't get confirmation through the existing channels that you have, in other words, using the phone numbers you have, then don't make the change. Now, I guess we're on the same page, Jamie?
Yeah, absolutely, Mary. I think, you know, like you say, a lot of the banks are actually, you know, either closed or the branches or going online themselves or telephone. So the amount of new bank accounts will be very small. So the amount of changes to bank accounts should be small as well.
Yeah.
And, you know, darkening out, they're more than likely going to be some form of fraud. So just be very careful.
Right. And again, I'd rather apologize for not doing it than have to explain where the money went. All right. Here's an interesting question, Jamie. How do you suggest confirming a bank change request for an international vendor, especially when there are time differences and language barriers?
So that's an interesting one. I mean, again, unfortunately, you're going to have to follow the same process, in my opinion. You know, you've got to contact the vendor. You've got to speak to somebody that can speak the language that you speak, whether that's, you know, US, American, English, whatever it will be. And no doubt somebody will do. It's very difficult, but you have to follow the same process, in my opinion.
And don't forget, everybody's going through this now. So people, well, there's two things going on. People are a little bit more understanding, but also some companies are really strapped for cash. So it makes for interesting times. Okay, so I'm going to go. I have on the next 2 pages some red flags as identified by the FBI. These are the typical ones that we see. If there's, all of a sudden it's rush. Okay, why is it rush? Last minute changes, again, verify. Using a established communication channels. Anyone who says only email me, don't call me, only email, that should be a huge red sign. And also requests for advanced payment when this was not usually asked for. So if all of a sudden a vendor is asking for cash in advance, you have to question what's going on. Now, I do realize that some companies are in precarious financial situations, and their vendors might not want to supply them unless they got cash in advance. But again, verify, verify. Be skeptical of last minute changes. Make sure that the URL in the email is associated with the business it claims to be from. Look at those hyperlinks. Look at them closely. Make sure that they don't have any misspellings. Remember, sometimes it can be just one email, just one letter. And then look at the email address that was used to send emails. It may look okay, but you can hover your cursor over it. One of the things that I've seen in the last year or so in these frauds, which were these were out and out frauds, is somebody might be pretending to be John Jones, president of ABC Company, and what they'll do is they'll set up an email address, president ABC Company at Gmail or Yahoo, wherever. And if you're not paying close attention, you'll see President, you'll see ABC Company, you won't notice that it's Gmail, Yahoo, etc. So really, we've got to be alert. Do you want to add anything to that?
Yes, so I agree totally, Mary. So the advice, obviously, in the UK would be very similar, or across Europe. And I think, unfortunately, we're in times where fraud's been going on for a lot longer than the coronavirus has been, and it's been going on for many, many years. But we've got to be even more suspicious than we ever have been. So, you know, it's we talked about something. We were on a session earlier, Mary, where we were talking about collaboration. So your suppliers, your vendors will expect you to collaborate with them. So speak to them regularly. There may be some delay in getting payments, but you're better to do that. The vendor wants their payment, you want to make the payments. So if that takes a bit of time and effort, put the time and effort in.
So here's one that says I had a vendor whose email was hacked, so I received a fake email that looked real. Because indeed it was. So be careful, and this is when picking up the phone to verify is important, okay? And that's where that will really pay off, even though I know it's a lot of extra work. Okay, we haven't really talked about the security issue, but many of you are working from home. Some of your home networks will be password protected, some of them won't be. Same with public Wi-Fi networks. Now, I don't think many people today are sitting in Starbucks doing work, and please God, may we go back to a day when we can do that. But be careful about these networks because many of them aren't password protected. I know when we have people visit and they want to use our network, we have to give them the password. Which I have to admit, I don't know what it is right now. But anyway, when they'll be getting on, I can see some of my neighbors have networks that aren't password protected. So be really, really careful. I know that one of the things I'm thinking about is when this is over, I'm thinking that perhaps we should all change all our passwords. What do you think, Jamie? Am I being overcautious?
No, not at all. You came on a session with us earlier, Mary, and you gave that advice, and I think it was some of the best advice you gave, which was when we get out of this lockdown scenario, I think we should all change all of our passwords. Purely on the basis, who knows what's waiting? So it's better to be overcautious and be careful than not at all.
And that's the world we live in today. Okay, so I want to talk about stale dated invoices. And by stale dated invoices, I just mean invoices that are old. I was first alerted to this, I think on one of these sessions, Jamie, somebody wrote it in. And then I sat back and I thought about some of the things that are going on here. And I realized, oh, this has happened to us. So what's going on is, for many of your vendors, business has plummeted. They're 50% where they used to be, 25% of what they did in the past. And they've got excess staff, or they're just looking for cash. And what they're doing is going back and they're looking over old activity, old invoices, etc. And they're finding activity that they forgot to bill for, that they didn't bill for, and they're coming and they're billing you for it. So now you get, or at least what I got is I got notification from one of our vendors that transactions that happened last October, November, December hadn't been paid for. And when I first got it, I'm like, I pay my bills. What do you mean? And then I looked through and I looked at what they sent, and they had not billed for these things. So no, they hadn't been paid for. And yes, we did owe them the money. So that's a legitimate transaction. Of course, this isn't the time of year when you're just thrilled to, you've got all this extra time to go and check and make sure you didn't pay for it. So the next step down from that, and what my reader was alluding to, was the same legitimate vendor, only this time they're strapped for payments, and what they're doing is they're strapped for money, is they are now going to maybe something that was a disputed item that you agreed you wouldn't pay for, or they're creating non-existent charges, or maybe they're charging for freight that they never charged for because your contract calls for them to pay the paid, or maybe they're just making it up. So when you get these stale dated invoices, you want to make sure that you review them and make sure that they are legitimate charges, not something that's non-existent. I'm curious if anyone would has been experiencing this. Have you seen, you gotten any, Jamie?
Yeah, so in the UK, I'm sure it's the same in the US. So older invoices that have sat on the ledger for a period of time should be regularly reviewed. So managers should be have a report, an exception report on these. They should be asking their teams to review them regularly. But like you say, where cash is now difficult, you may well find that vendors are putting charges through or putting charges through they don't ordinarily do. So it definitely is worth challenging. But again, it goes back to my point earlier. It's a collaboration thing. Speak to your vendors regularly. I'm sure they would welcome the phone calls, and open the dialogue between each of you.
Right. And somebody has written in that this has happened to them, especially with smaller vendors. The stale dated charges are showing up, and she says that when she sends them to the approver, she puts please in capital letters review, because these may or may not been be legitimate. And someone else has said they've had invoices where they've had prior interested in. Someone else has said they have invoices that are in draft. So it's possible. Somebody else has said, oh my God, they're getting invoices that are 2 to 6 years old. And the com last comment says they agree with Jamie, checking statements regularly and at least confirming that the goods or service has been received. So lots of that going on. And then lastly, just phony invoices completely from an unknown vendor, someone you've never done business with. They're showing up also. Again, hoping that companies have their guard down and they'll go ahead and pay them. I haven't seen any of them yet, personally. That doesn't mean they're not coming. Have you seen any?
Not as much, Mary. I think the other bit I'd add is that obviously with the phony invoices or just be very careful and look at open purchase orders as well. Make sure if you've got the open purchase orders which date back a little while or blanket orders. Just be really careful when you're matching invoices to those type of purchase orders that they are again legitimate. So I like the comment earlier somebody made, if you're sending these out for approval, really highlight that this is an old transaction. Can they really take some time to review those rather than just, which we all know approvers tend to do, click, 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 click,
Right.
approve, approve, approve. So really highlight those issues as well.
Okay. All right. Fun times, right? Because just what you're dying to do is look at 2-year-old invoices. Oh, well. Okay. Now, one more issue. This has to do with airline refunds. Okay. Many of you will have had employees who had travel planned and they'd made hotel reservations, airline reservations, and though airlines have been fairly good about when they cancel the flight, either refunding the money. Now, in a few cases, they're offering credits. I know at least one airline is offering a credit that will never expire. My feeling with that is don't take the credit, get the refund, because you don't know if that airline is going to be in business anymore. The second part of this is, yes, you want to get the refund. You want to make sure you get it. If it's on the company card, you verify that came in. But if the employee put it on their card, you need to make sure that they don't forget that they got the refund and forget to turn it over. So that's going to be another challenge for all those companies. And we know, at least in the US, there are many, many of them, like half the companies out there, allow their employees to use their own cards for business travel. So if they put an air flight on there, you need to make sure you get that money back. What do you think, Jamie?
Yeah, I think it's a really good point, actually, Mary. I think there's probably the same sort of stats in the UK and Europe, where some people have corporate cards or expense cards, but some people use their own. So if flights are cancelled or hotel bookings are cancelled and they get refunded, yeah, make sure that you're following that up with the employees to make sure that gets refunded back to the company as well.
Yeah. Okay. And this is one of the, when we do the fraud surveys, about, I think it's 10%, I'm doing this off the top of my head, of companies say that they have employees who forget to return refunds. Some of it legitimate, some not. Somebody has written in, "Oh Lord, this has been a nightmare for me to track." Okay. So we're coming down to the end. Of our time. So let's have our roundup. So when I talk about payment fraud protection, I like to say it's a team effort. And by that, I mean everybody from the CEO down to the folks who sweep the floor can participate. And by this mean, I mean everyone must be educated, because with fraud, the protection and crooks playing fraud, it's all in the details. And if they can find a little detail to maneuver in, they will. And I understand that this is hard, especially when people are working almost to the breaking point in some cases. You want to talk about this at all, Jamie?
Yeah, I agree with you, Mary. I think it's one thing for an AP manager to be mindful, but it's in everybody's interest to be mindful on fraud. And what a horrible situation we find ourselves in, that we're constantly looking out for fraud rather than the ways to improve things. But it's where we live, and it's the environment we find ourselves. So you must be very, very vigilant when it comes to these frauds.
Yeah, unfortunately. Okay, so I have a quick password story, and then I just want to, I call this resist the temptation to simplify. And we all know don't use passwords like password 123. But in this was a company where everybody's user ID was their email address, and that's pretty common. I don't really have any, I have no problem with this. But what this department decided is, this accounting group, is that everybody within the accounting department would use the same password. Okay? And $8 million later, they discovered, you know what, this was not a great practice, because one of their managers, would go in and impersonate different people, because he knew what their password was and he knew what their user ID was. So hopefully none of you will do that. But really think about changing passwords, and because we're in for some fun times, I think. And Jamie?
Yeah, no, I think, as I said earlier, Mary, I think it's the best bit of advice you can give at the moment. I think, let's be honest, fraudsters are opportunists. So if they see any opportunity, and there was all this thing about Zoom sharing passwords and people hacking passwords. So if you've got the same password across multiple devices or multiple machines, I think it's great advice to go and change all those passwords as and when.
And don't make them all the same, because this way, at least if you're hacked on one, it's only one. And so we're in for some fun times. And I know myself, a lot of times my password is saved online, and after a while, I don't even know what it is. So I'm going to take this advantage of this upcoming change the passwords to hopefully get all my passwords. You wouldn't do anything that foolish, would you, Jamie?
No, I give all the pass my passwords to the wife.
Oh, yeah. Okay, there's a smart man. So just in closing, not only is payment fraud protection a team sport, it has many different components, some of which, are more security related. We want to educate everybody. We want to make sure we use the appropriate security protocols. And I fear that some of us working at home probably don't have as tight a security protocols as we would like, and obviously passwords and changing them and storing passwords, but also our AP practices, our best practices, controls, strong internal controls, and separation of duties will continue to play a key role. Do you have anything to add to that?
I think what I'd say as well, Mary, is the communication. Make sure
Yeah.
you communicate. Every time you find a fraud, you come across a new fraud, just like your members and our members do, spread the word, tell people what you found. So communication's a big area as well.
Yeah, and tell me, please tell me, because I am a blabbermouth when it comes to this stuff.
Thank you.